Well, you know, sometimes there can be so much such a thing as too much of a good thing. They put another clock here in the Le Chaux Dome, and it looks even more precise than the one we've had, the impulse clock. I love a clock called the impulse clock, though. Just seems to encourage the spontaneous side of me. But of course, these two clocks, each of which looks absolutely official, absolutely naval observatory standard kind of clockish, has a different time on it. So which clock do you believe? Well, which do you like? That's always the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, at the bottom, at the very bottom of a story from the New York Times, someday, Chris, which clock would you believe?
At this point, I don't know.
He doesn't know. All right. At the very bottom of a story, introduced by the word finally, so you know there's no more to tell, in the New York Times a few days ago, there's this, which I bet you didn't hear, unless you read paragraphs that begin finally. There is an official American reluctance to delve too deeply. This is about Saudi Arabia. When a number of senior, dig those words, a number of senior United States intelligence officials tried to undertake a full-scale study known as a national intelligence estimate to assess the stability of Saudi Arabia in the mid-1990s, White House, those would be Clinton White House officials, blocked the effort, arguing that the inevitably negative conclusions would leak. Said one former administration official, the attitude was, don't touch this kind of stuff. It's too delicate to handle. Unquote. The study has yet to be done. However, another study is being done. According to the London Observer, cannabis, known in this country as marijuana, is a wonder, this is today's London Observer, is a wonder drug. Capable of radically transforming the lives of very sick people, according to the results of the first clinical trials of the drug. Tests sanctioned by the British government are proving far more successful than doctors, patients, and marijuana campaigners ever dared hope. Some of the patients are simply calling it a miracle. Taking the drug, still illegal, of course, has allowed a man previously so crippled with pain that he was impotent to become a father, a woman paralyzed by multiple sclerosis to ride a horse, and a man who couldn't sit up in a chair on his own to live without a caregiver. Preliminary results of the British government trial started last year suggest that 80% of those taking part have derived more benefit from marijuana than from any other drug, with many describing it as miraculous. Doctors believe marijuana, cannabis, could eventually prove useful in conditions such as osteoporosis, cancer, HIV, AIDS, arthritis, spine injury, and certain forms of mental illness. That's right. This is your brain on drugs. Hello, welcome to the show.
I have found, for when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip, be grateful for a pleasant trip, and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? So take a deep breath, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. And tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember the famous man who had to fall to rise again?
Noah. Noah's a good man. He was sitting up on top of his hill. He said, "Oh, you fine feather, fair weather friends, listen to me. Won't you let me help you? 'Cause no one else will. Believe me, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead. You know, I've had my share of worries, and I have lived under the clouds of fear. And you can hold on till your sorrows, forget about your tomorrows, darling. It's funny how you want to live when you think the end is near. Listen to me, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead, you know. Day you have is a blessing, and every smile's a friend you can lean on, and everyone you love is the dressing, the icing, the cake. If your Noah's a good man. He was sitting up on top of that hill, and he said, "It's a bitter pill to swallow, but forget about your tomorrows, darling. The big man didn't get you, but you know one day he will. Listen to me, nothing lasts forever. So the good book says, nothing lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead, darling. Nothing, nothing, nothing ever lasts forever. Nothing ever lasts forever. Get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead. Get into your clothes, get into your clothes, you can sleep when you're dead."
Oh,
From the edge of America, spreading happiness wherever I go. I'm Harry Shearer with another edition of Le Show. United States government announced maybe a few days ago it was going to reach out to Madison Avenue to help with the propaganda battle, the war for hearts and minds. So maybe that campaign can be resuscitated. This is your brain on Taliban. You know, because it's going to be obsolete for pretty soon. Maybe not. Who knows? We are getting back to normal. No better evidence of that than all over New York, where this broadcast still is not heard. Never will be. They're too hip. Come on, face it. They are too hip for this. They're too hip for this room. But if New York is getting back to normal, you know what that means. First of all, the holder of the lease of the World Trade Center is squaring off in court battles against his insurance company. The issue? One incident or two. Would you care for one incident or two? The question is, were the twin attacks on the Twin Towers one insurable incident, in which case he would be owed $3.6 billion, or were they two incidents, in which case he would be owed $7.2 billion? Don't you know? And he's also squaring off against the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which owns the land on which the World Trade Centers sat. And there's a big squabble developing over who is going to decide what gets built there. And when? It's New York. Also, prosecutors today dropped serious criminal charges against 12 firefighters involved in a clash with police officers at the site of the Trade Center. Charges against two firefighters were dropped entirely, while all felony charges were dropped against 10 others who still face misdemeanor counts. The 12 were arrested Friday after several allegedly punched police criticized the city's decision to reduce the number of fire personnel searching for human remains at Ground Zero. Five police officers were injured in the scuffle, and the police commissioner sharply criticized the firefighters. So you can punch a cop in New York as long as you're wearing a New York Fire Department uniform, I guess. Is that normal? I don't know. One incident or two, ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration. The movies are taking all of the footage of all of the pictures of the World Trade Center towers out. As you know, a shot was taken out of Zoolander. But the one place where that has not been yet affected by such, let's call it self-restraint, is basketball coverage. I was watching a bunch of NBA games this week because the season has started again. Oh, man. If I were only George Will, I could rhapsodize insanely about that subject, but I'll just say the season has started. And two or three different commentators referred to a couple of different teams who have two tall guys that they may play at the same time and referred to them as the Twin Towers. Don't do that. Don't do that. News you may have missed: 7 months after it set off a political firestorm by suspending the Clinton administration's toughened standard for acceptable levels of naturally occurring arsenic in drinking water, the Bush administration announced this week it is adopting the same standard, 10 parts of arsenic per billion. Chrissy Todd Whitman said it will improve the safety of drinking water for millions of Americans and better protect against the risk of cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Critics said a recent study commissioned by the administration showed it should have adopted an even tougher standard of 3 parts per billion. Of course, that British study suggests that they should put marijuana in the drinking water. No, it doesn't. And why don't we hear more about this? People, the cover-up. Dateline London. Psychic spoon bender Uri Geller says record company Sony Music removed religious words and symbols from a picture he drew for Michael Jackson's new album. Who is covering up? Geller, a former Israeli paratrooper famous for using mysterious mental powers to bend spoons. True, ladies and gentlemen, it's all true. Told Reuters that Sony Music had taken out the words God, Jerusalem, USA, and Angel 2000 and had replaced a Star of David with a pentagram. Pentagram, isn't that satanic? Yes, it is, kids. Jackson's long-awaited album. How long have you been waiting? Me? I've been waiting that long. Was released on Monday. The sensitivity of not wanting any religious symbols in my drawing I found quite extraordinary, says Geller, because God is universal. I went along with it because I understood that one of the removed items is a very Jewish symbol, and Michael is an international pop star. But I never did understand why the creator's name was eliminated, said Geller. Sony had no immediate comment. Geller drew the detailed black and white illustration on a napkin in Jackson's New York hotel room last year. Wasn't supposed to be a Star of David. It was supposed to be a Stonehenge, wasn't it? The two were close friends, and Jackson was best man at Geller's wedding, although he arrived 2 hours late. Oh, man. The picture, the only illustration other than Jackson's picture in the booklet accompanying the CD, remains packed with imagery. It features the heads of a man and woman, the pyramids, a UFO, and other symbols representing love, peace, and hope. Geller said Sony technicians in Los Angeles had spent 2 days using a computer to scan the picture for hidden words. The Hebrew letter Shin, used to symbolize God, was left in the picture, said Geller. They didn't know what that was. Now, where else, ladies and gentlemen? Who is covering up that we don't know why God, Jerusalem, USA, and Angel 2000? That's what I want to know, is what he meant by that. First of all, it's a year late, and who's Angel 2000? Is that who he married? Inquiring minds need to know, don't you think? There is hot property. It is so very hot. After nearly 2 years on the market, an Aspen, Colorado trophy home that became the center of an international financial scandal has a buyer, the chairman of Priceline.com, Richard S. Braddock. You thought they were out of business. He's buying a home for $22 million. That's $5 million less than the asking price, so he got his own price. See? Just like he says. It's Peak House, the highest residence on Red Mountain. It's a Colorado record price for a single-family home. Landlocked Shipping Company, listed as the home's owner, revealed the pending sale in documents filed in Denver federal court. Braddock's net worth was once over $1 billion, but now it's several hundred thousand. So how does he... Volume. The New York couple intends to use the home for family reunions. 3-acre estate perched 1,000 feet above the town features 5 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, 2 swimming pools, and a 15-car garage. It was the talk of Aspen in 1997, 3 years after it was completed, when a Czech-born financier moved in, paying a then-record $19 million, and began hosting lavish parties that doubled as investment seminars. He has since left for the Bahamas. always a good coda for any story about a guy who used to host financial seminars. He has since left for the Bahamas. And televangelists Jan and Paul Crouch. Listen up, everybody. Of the Trinity Broadcasting Network have purchased a Newport Beach house for close to $5 million. Praise! Oh, praise! Praise the realtors! The home was described as a, quote, palatial estate with ocean and city views, unquote. These are televangelists, ladies and gentlemen. Go figure. The Crouches had been living in a smaller house in the same neighborhood. But why? Why would you live in a smaller house if you're preaching the word of, well, his name has been removed from my napkin, unfortunately. The house they bought has 6 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, a billiard room, a climate-controlled wine cellar. It's grape juice cellar now. a sweeping staircase, and a crystal chandelier. The three-story, nearly 9,500-square-foot house, which has an elevator, also has a six-car garage, a tennis court, and a pool with a fountain. The house is on slightly more than an acre. Jan Crouch had been wanting a bigger yard for her dogs, sources said. Trinity Broadcasting, their network, has more than 768 TV stations on the air worldwide. Eat your heart out, Rupert Murdoch. The Crouches oversee a $100 million a year enterprise. Faithful, this is now, this last sentence, in the real estate column. So you know it's got to be true. Even so, faithful viewers are said to consider the couple as everyday folks. You can trust the real estate columnist to tell you who the everyday folks are, can't you? All right, that is how hot the property is. But there is spy news. Yes, of course, there are morale problems at the CIA after the apparent intelligence failure. But there is intelligence news, also from the London Observer. British spies have given up looking for aliens after more than half a century of fruitless monitoring of thousands of UFO reports. These reports have been logged by the Ministry of Defense and passed on to its intelligence branch. But the Directorate of Intelligence, Scientific and Technical, the DIST, has now DIST. Well, it's abandoned the quest for ET. The directorate specializes in scientific espionage. Documents show that it asked last year that it be sent no further UFO reports. These records, whether from members of the public or service sources, have not proved valuable, the department concluded. The decision ends 5 decades of Army intelligence experts investigating UFO sightings from all over Britain, including many from Royal Air Force pilots. They are saying, essentially, they have wasted their time for 50 years and they want nothing more to do with it, said Dave Clark, a leading UFO researcher. Dave Clark. Catch him if you can. Britain's official search for UFOs began in the late 1940s. Peaked with a top-secret government study in 1951. Details of that study were first published in this British newspaper only 2 weeks ago. It concluded that no UFO sightings were genuine, but that the reports were hushed up to avoid creating panic at the height of the Cold War. Clark believes the government is finally willing to admit that studying UFO sightings is pointless. He said modern radar systems have become sophisticated enough to explain the vast majority of sightings as being aircraft or atmospheric conditions. Well, Clark, oh, I see. He's of the National Center for Folklore Studies, so he's a folklorist who studies UFOs, don't you see? He's having a wild weekend, and the CIA tried to uncover the Kremlin's deepest secrets during the 1960s by turning cats into walking bugging devices. Recently declassified documents show. Thank God for declassification. We would have never known this till now. In one experiment during the Cold War, a cat dubbed Acoustic Kitty was wired up for use as an eavesdropping platform. It was hoped that the animal, surgically altered to accommodate transmitting and control devices, could listen to secret conversations from windowsills, park benches, or trash buckets. Victor Marchetti, a former CIA officer, said Project Acoustic Kitty was a gruesome creation. Quote, they slit the cat open, put batteries in him, wired him up. The tail was used as an antenna. They made a monstrosity. They tested him and tested him. They found he would walk off the job when he got hungry. So they put another wire in to override that. The first live trial was an expensive disaster. The technology is thought to have cost tens of millions of dollars. Quote, they took him out to a park, put him out of the van, and a taxi comes and runs him over. There they were, sitting in the van with all those dials, and the cat was dead. Acoustic Kitty took 5 years to design. Says one of the researchers involved in the experiment, I'm not sure how long after the operation the cat would have survived, even if it hadn't been run over. Acoustic Kitty, ladies and gentlemen, your tax dollars at work.
was a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. With every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name. Beware of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. Oh, be careful what you say, or you'll give yourself away. Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret Asian man, secret Asian man. They've given you a number and taken away your name. Persuasive lips. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number and taken away your name.
Here, Acoustic Kitty. Here, here, Kitty. Here, Acoustic. Hungry. Let's get that other wire in. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show, and it's time for me to read the trades for you. It's where even truer stuff than what I've already shared with you comes to the fore. By the way, thanks to listener in Chicago who sent a note this week saying you like the show, but play less icky music. Here's some icky music for you. World Series virtual ad sales lag from advertising age. I'll read it for you. As we finally wind down the baseball season, if I were George Will, I would rhapsodize melancholily about that. For the first time, Major League Baseball has permitted World Series broadcasts to include virtual ads inserted behind the batter on the screen. But due to the slow economy, demand for the service from Major League Baseball's corporate sponsors has been less than expected, a person familiar with the matter said. So that has given Fox the unexpected chance to promote its own programming. Under the deal Major League Baseball signed with Fox, the network has the right to offer only those advertisers who are official Major League Baseball sponsors the chance to run an ad behind home plate for half an inning in exchange for three commercials that run during the game, the person close to the situation said. Fox, though, has had trouble selling out the World Series. And not enough Major League Baseball sponsors purchased the required three commercials to fill the 18 half innings of home plate signage. So Major League Baseball allowed the agreement to be altered so sponsors who purchased only a single spot could have an ad behind the plate for half an inning. Sponsors that bought multiple spots would get more than half an inning. Major League Baseball also allowed Fox to take up to five half innings to plug its own shows. A Fox Sports spokesman would not comment specifically on details of the contract. Though home plate ads have been used during games for years on local and national regular season games, Major League Baseball has never allowed them during the Fall Classic until now. The ads were not used during the first two rounds of the playoffs. The ads were virtually inserted using technology from Sport Vision, the same company that created the yellow first down markers Fox used on National Football League telecasts, until abandoning them earlier this year in a cost-cutting move. You figure out where the first down is on your own. And, also from Advertising Age, Doral, the third largest cigarette brand in the country, is taking its biggest step toward since 1984, when it leapt to the discount category. It's inching its way back to premium. R.J. Reynolds is upgrading its best-selling brand, Doral, long positioned as a folksy down-home brand, with a new blend, package, and ad campaign to make it more contemporary and mainstream. Doral going mainstream, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is changing. Conclusion, it becomes obvious when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Here's good news from the Washington Post. Until now, America's nuclear plants have never been required to be able to defend themselves against attacks by air or water. They were tested solely on their ability to stop a land assault by a few mock intruders with automatic weapons, explosives, and perhaps a sport utility vehicle, with limited assistance from at most one insider. The plants are always warned about the tests of their ability to defend themselves in advance, yet 47% have revealed significant weaknesses in their security forces, even though they knew about the tests in advance. Significant here means that a real attack would have put the nuclear reactor in jeopardy. An American Chernobyl, said NRC security specialist David Orrick in a 1999 internal report. This is nothing less than an evidence of an abject failure by the nuclear industry to be capable by themselves of protecting against radiological sabotage. Unquote, let's build more. What do you say? The commission had just decided at that point to scrap its own security tests. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission subsequently reversed itself, but before September 11th, it was considering a transition to industry-run self-assessments. It had even suspended imposition of penalties on plants where the security deficiencies were revealed. Okay. Isn't that fine? Everybody on the Sunday Yak shows is talking about this story in this week's New Yorker. Seymour Hersh reports the ferocity of the Taliban response to the first special ops ground operation in Afghanistan a few days ago, quote, scared the crap out of everyone, according to a senior military officer. The Delta team stormed Mullah Omar, he's the head of the Taliban's complex. They found little of value, but as they came out of the house, they ran into fierce resistance. We're surprised about the Taliban being good fighters again, Admiral Stufflebeam. You got to love the name, said a couple weeks ago. We're surprised they're still fighting. One senior official told Seymour Hersh, I don't know where the adult supervision for these operations is. Bobby Franks, the top general at U.S. Central Command, is clueless. The fiasco has triggered a review of commando tactics and procedures at the highest echelons. Meanwhile, the Ranger assault that was filmed, this was the other special op ground operation was sexy stuff and it looked good on television, one general told Hirsch. But the Rangers jumped only after an Army Pathfinder team, which specializes in working behind enemy lines, was on the ground and confirmed that the airfield was clear. The Rangers were not the first in. There's already response to that story. General Franks says it's BS. Admiral Stuffelbeam has not yet commented, but here's a report this morning from Fox News.
British and American reports are saying that the first U.S. ground troops in Afghanistan in that special operations raid near Kandahar ran into some serious fire and had 12 to 14 casualties, some of those serious. However, Fox News military sources say that report is over-exaggerated.
You see, trust Fox to know exactly how much exaggeration is necessary. The report is over-exaggerated. You want a network that exaggerates just enough, don't you? I think you do. I think you do. You let me know if you don't, okay? You know where to find me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have a special feature. Yes, we do. It's a regular feature, actually.
We're so sorry.
This week's apologies are, boy, we're getting some good apologies now. Rupert Murdoch, how about that for an apologizer? Haven't we all wished that Rupert Murdoch would apologize to us? Well, he has apologized to Christian Amanpour, CNN's chief international correspondent, for a recent column written by a columnist for the New York Post, which he owns. Andrea Pizer wrote a column in which she referred to Ms. Amanpour as a, quote, CNN war slut, unquote. That line, as well as another passage in which Ms. Pizer wondered what the reporter's, quote, Jewish in-laws think, unquote, outraged friends and colleagues of the CNN correspondent. Ms. Amanpour was troubled by it, too. She expressed her feelings in a letter to Mr. Murdoch. Murdoch then faxed a reply to Ms. Amanpour. He expressed regret for Ms. Pizer's column, but noted that he does not control the writing of Post staffers. The letter also mentioned that Murdoch has been called worse things by CNN founder Ted Turner. Turner, I believe, likened him to Hitler, didn't he? Yes, he did. Ms. Amanpour has received Murdoch's apology. I will say I was entirely satisfied with his reaction to the highly inappropriate vulgar language used by Ms. Pizer to describe me. She did say she found Murdoch's line about Turner to be hilarious. Ms. Pizer did not return phone messages. And also apologizing, the president of ABC News. You can't get better apologies than this, ladies and gentlemen. This is a good week for apologizing. ABC's news chief, David Westin, told a group of college students at Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism that as a journalist, he had no opinion on whether the Pentagon was a legitimate target for terrorists. After that quote became public, he has now apologized. I was wrong, he said. It was telecast last Saturday night on C-SPAN. Asked whether he believed the Pentagon was a legitimate target, he said it was important for him and ABC journalists not to have an opinion on it. Our job is to determine what is, not what ought to be, and when we get into the job of what ought to be, I think we're not doing a service to the American people, said Westin, who is a lawyer. A conservative watchdog organization was monitoring the C-SPAN broadcast, and an email went out to hundreds of contacts. Quote, this is an example to us of somebody at a very high level of news media following a policy of journalist first, American second, he said. Westin said he was trying to illustrate an academic principle that all journalists should draw a firm line between what they know and their personal opinion. Upon reflection, he said, I realized my answer did not address the specifics of September 11th. Under any interpretation, the attack on the Pentagon was criminal and entirely without justification. I apologize for any harm that my misstatement may have caused. Of course, there's also criticism of the Reuters news agency for desisting from calling the terrorists terrorists. They're no longer doing that. And there's criticism by the active duty military of the military analysts now working for many of the news channels for second-guessing them. What we need is a thorough airing of, you know what we need? We need a town meeting.
From ABC News, this is a Nightline town meeting. Journalism goes to war. Now, from a secure location on an unidentified campus, here is Ted Koppel. Good evening. It is every journalist's dream to cover a major war, but those for whom that dream eventually comes true realize soon enough that war, especially modern war, may be an uncoverable story. We journalists share with government officials a unique burden. We must find that perfect midpoint, that sweet spot, if we may descend into sports metaphor for a moment, between telling too much and not telling enough. But unlike government officials, journalists must also, depending on your point of view, serve their corporate paymasters or help keep the economy afloat. It is a balancing act worthy of a Willenda. We have four distinctly non-Willendas with us tonight to consider all of this, although they may end up indulging in some verbal acrobatics. Rush Limbaugh is the most listened to radio talk show host in America and comes to us tonight from Palm Beach, Florida, although he's sitting in front of a set that resembles New York's skyline. Aaron Brown, formerly of this network, has assumed anchor duties in CNN's coverage of what they call America's New War. Tom Brokaw is the managing editor and anchor over at NBC's Nightly News. His office was the first in the mainstream media industry to receive an anthrax-tainted letter. And General Norman Schwarzkopf, who, since he retired from commanding America's success in the Gulf War, has been military analyst for NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, and, until it closed down, NBCI. Gentlemen, welcome, and Rush, if you'd kick us off here, you have been, have you not, particularly outspoken against the complaints of some journalists that the government is withholding information?
Well, of course the government is withholding information. We're in a war, Ted. That's what governments do in a war. But, you know, for everybody who's ever denied the obvious truth that the media pack is overwhelmingly liberal, you should just hear these crybabies that are actually saying to our defense secretary, can we go along on special ops missions, please? We've got a right to know.
Mr. Limbaugh, are you okay?
Ted, I'm just having a little trouble calibrating my sarcastic kid voice at the moment. Ted, as you know, I have at my disposal technology that I'm not going to talk about that makes it possible for me to be having this conversation with you.
Well, the broadcast feed you're getting is closed captioned.
Well, whatever the technology may be, I'm just saying, you know, these are kids who think they're playing a game called Let's Inform the Public. And then there are these other people over at the Pentagon actually trying to run a war while, by the way, confining their cigarette smoking to the outer lobby and ordering brassieres for half the uniforms.
Aaron Brown, the president of this news division this week, had to apologize for not appearing to have an opinion about the attack on the Pentagon. You've given a lot of thought to that line that separates the personal from the professional.
Well, I've kind of obliterated it, to be honest. I think that line may be part of the world before September 11th that's gone. And I think what David Westin, who's a fine man and an outstanding news executive, I think what got him into trouble was the notion that we should inject our opinions into our work. Clearly that's wrong, but there's no way, I think, covering a story that's as challenging as this, for us to keep our emotions out of our reporting, especially in this era, Ted. You know, I'm an anchor, and the only thing I can do that a crawl at the bottom of the screen can't is to offer some kind of emotional reassurance that we're going through the same thing in the newsroom that you're going through at home.
Aaron, at the risk of cutting you to ribbons before I'm completely through processing your comments through our technology here, what the American people are trying to tell you, I know they're telling me, or at least that's what our technology tells me that they're telling me, this story is not about you, about whether you had to work late, about whether mean old Mr. Ashcroft won't honor your Freedom of Informania Act request in the middle of a war. This is not a ratings war, Aaron. This is an actual war.
Rush, I'm aware of that, and I'm not saying that we all have to be Geraldo Rivera and virtually enlist in the army.
Mr. Rivera is abandoning his talk show to become a war correspondent for Fox News.
That's right, Ted. But I do think that war, above everything else, is a people story. And the only way to do a people story is to err on the side of being people.
Tom Brokaw, you became part of the story when your assistant opened a letter from Trenton, New Jersey.
That's right, Ted. As one of the writers of the Letterman show said to me, I haven't heard this much about New Jersey since Johnny Carson retired. Seriously, how do you stay out of the story when the terrorists, or whoever they are, and whatever we're supposed to call them, make you part of the story? I mean, this is something that Dan Rather and I have struggled with for weeks now, and I'm sure that Peter Jennings, had he been deemed relevant by these monsters, if I'm permitted to call them that, he'd have been struggling with it too. You know, Ted, for 3 weeks, we haven't been allowed to broadcast from our own set. I've had to sit down through the entire broadcast, and we have years' worth of numbers establishing that the audience likes the broadcast most when I'm doing the standing. But to me, so much of this story is suddenly seeing a new generation display the pride and the determination to be their own greatest generation. Maybe we've had a little something to do with that, and that alone, along with the hundreds of consecutive weeks at number one, would be a fine legacy.
A
legacy.
Indeed. General Schwarzkopf, the military pundit, may not be part of the story, but does he wish he were?
Well, Ted, some of our friends on active duty like to believe that they just invented warfare, but believe me, I have the greatest of respect for all of our uniformed personnel, particularly Leadership Corps, and I don't think anybody could have handled the first 3 or 4 weeks of this unexpected and unprecedented kind of warfare any better than they have. Now, it might have been possible to achieve results faster with a more cogent strategy, and that's something I think my viewers want to know. But in the end, you know, we're patriots too, and I, for one, think it's possible and right to let a belief that bombing the Pentagon was wrong enter my work. I mean, I used to virtually live in the damn building, and not to take anything away from anything that anybody else has been through, but just to remind you, they didn't send an envelope to the Pentagon.
Well, we know what they sent, General. Is it possible to say, and I'm going to throw this out to all and sundry as long as they have microphones on, is it possible to say that in covering a new kind of war, we may need a new set of rules?
Ted, Mr. Brown. I don't know about anybody else here, but what I'm finding so unsettling about this whole experience is that it seems like I'm spending half of each day revising my own personal rule book. I mean, you know, should we be doing less on anthrax and more on smallpox? Even though the anthrax is happening, smallpox is a much bigger risk. You know, this is the kind of thing that keeps us from talking about the Yankees over lunch.
Ted, I hope it means a new set of rules, and hopefully these rules won't be drawn up at the Harvard Journalism School.
Rush, I can assure you they won't, since Harvard doesn't have a J school. I know. I tried to endow a seat there.
But, Ted, the Pentagon's job, as Mr. Limbaugh said earlier, is to withhold as much information as possible. I think the new rules are that somebody's got to fill that void, even if that means that we have to operate in a fact-poor environment.
Gentlemen, I don't know if I know more after this evening than I did before, but if I don't, at least I know why. My thanks to all of you for joining me in this town meeting, and our thanks to the Chancellor and Public Affairs Director of this regrettably unnamed university for being such secure hosts, and thanks, too, to our invited audience of faculty members and parking police. That's our broadcast for tonight. I'm Ted Koppel. Good night.
This has been an ABC Town Meeting. Journalism goes to war. This was a production of ABC News. More people get their news from ABC than get their entertainment from it.
plastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, AOL Time Warner has cut a deal with China's government that allows it to be given direct access to Chinese audiences. It launches its Chinese CETV channel next year in the prosperous Guangdong province, offering a mixture of cartoons, game shows, movies, and sports, in addition to versions of some shows like Miami Vice. In exchange, China's Central Television's English language Channel 9 will be carried by Time Warner Cable Systems in New York, L.A., and Houston. Channel 9 programming is described as, quote, a slower, less adventurous version of U.S. educational television, unquote. Please give. Less adventurous than U.S. educational television. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. Enough adventuresomeness for the week. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, on XM satellite radio wherever you are, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like... it's like having a less adventurous version of PBS, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Hey, don't get me wrong. Lou Rukeyser is out there. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Shearer saying so long, and don't forget to feed the acoustic kitty. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. This is Your Brain on Radio.